Welcome to No Filter, a new sports podcast hosted by three veteran broadcasters. I am one. I'm Eli Zarrett. This is a show where we will say what we think without fear of recrimination. We're all a bunch of old guys. We're not looking for a new job after this, and we don't care who thinks what about what we say. We say what we think, and we will tell each other if we don't agree with what we think. Bob Page and Denny McClain are the two partners, and Denny, we've worked together for many, many years back in the mid-90s. Good to be with you again, partner. Just a quarter century later, no big deal.
Just a quarter century later. Listen, this is going to be a lot of fun. I think the big difference is we don't need this, is what I'm saying. I mean, now we can really let it hang out. We let it hang out a lot back then in the old days. But there are a lot of things we were unable to say because of sponsorships and things like that.
Yeah, we work for a corporation, and that's one of the interesting things about the gig economy.
And so now we've decided to bring Mr. Meek and Mild in, Bob Page.
Yes, Bob Page, in case you don't know, went to Michigan State. Right out of school in the mid-70s, I met Bob at he was at WJR. I was Detroit's first FM sportscast. We've crossed paths many, many times. He's worked both at JR and Channel 7 in Detroit. And follow me, two radio stations. You follow me on JZZ and Riff, right? As I recall, I left and you came.
I followed you all over the place, but you guys shamelessly, without ever crediting us, you followed Ron Cameron and me.
That's right. You guys
don't exist without Ron Cameron and me. We started that show in Detroit in 1984. And then when I moved to New York in 1988, what happens? Oh, it's the Eli and Denny show now, right?
But the difference is you were on cable TV back then, which is a good point, because cable TV wasn't really in its didn't come into its own until much later than that. Like
we were also on Where God's Presence Radiates, WGPR TV, channel 62. Ooh. Over the air.
Ah.
And there used to be a channel 31. Yep. In Ann Arbor. We were on that too, so it wasn't just a cable thing. But man, we had a lot of fun. And Denny was saying a moment ago, well there were times in our past where we couldn't say things because of sponsors. Not for us, there wasn't.
It's true.
We weren't worried about sponsors or teams or anything like that.
Well, people who may be unfamiliar with your career, you spent 10 years, really, on national television at MSG Network, and eventually, because you couldn't really keep your mouth shut, you were ripping on the Rangers and the Knicks, who were paying you your salary, and they finally said, enough of this.
Well, I mean, that's close, but I will say this. Our network in New York, Madison Square Garden Network, really was independent. We paid $500 million to George Steinbrenner and the Yankees for the Yankees' rights in 1989. And Steinbrenner, after that, proceeded to call our network president, a guy named Bob Gutkowski, frequently. And the tenor of the phone call, the subject was always the same. How can you let Page say this stuff about us on the air at night? And Bob Gutkowski, really one of the best bosses I ever had, said to George, we paid you $500 million. You run the Yankees. I'm going to run the network. And as the Bob Evans things go, you know, the Hollywood producer, the kid stays in the picture. You got to have a rabbi. You got to have a rabbi.
That's true.
And as you know, Howard Cosell stayed in the picture only because he had a rabbi, Leonard Goldenson at ABC. When all these anti-Semitic clowns from across the country, get that Jew off the air. How can you let this guy on the air saying this stuff? And the teams complained. Leonard Goldenson at ABC said the kid stays in the picture. Yes, of course.
Anyway, what's interesting about this show is at this point in our careers, we're going to get to the Super Bowl matchup.
You think we're going to get it this hour?
Well, let's get the real – we'll get there in 1 minute. The beauty of this is that the three of us would never work for a traditional media company again. We're not going to work for any corporate bosses or guys in suits that can have say over what we do. So this is the beauty of the gig economy. Also, the scary thing about it is because if we're going to make any money, it's going to come from us, not from salaries. We're going to have to sell sponsorships and stuff like that, which we will do. So let's start with...
Yeah, well, the other thing about that is I want to mention, so we're not going to be responsible or be held accountable by corporate suits. At our age, after our careers... When was the last time either of you two guys actually wore a suit, a nice suit?
Well, that's a good point because my real last on-air job.
I can't remember the last time I wore a suit.
I did with the Pistons, but again, I had a rabbi
in
Pete Skorich who protected me from guys like George Blaha that wanted me to just, you know, wrap the company line, and I was allowed to have a little bit of freedom. But yes, you need to have somebody protecting you, and I had that. So that was my last.
You're right about the suit. Yeah, I don't remember. I'm sitting here trying to think the last time I had a I had a sports coat on a couple of months ago, but that's about it. Sweaters. I mean, it's winter time anyway.
You still do a lot of appearances, you know, card show signings and stuff. So, but you never wear sport coats and ties or suits and ties, do you?
No, at the dinners I'll wear a sport coat, but never a tie. But the thing about it is, but all of the dinners that I do are people don't wear ties anymore. You know, they'll wear some. And what gets me is somebody wearing a three-piece suit without a tie. I mean, I think the kind of crazy.
Well, he used to wear the Nehru jacket. Remember the Nehru jacket when he played the Hammond organ in Las Vegas? He had the big gold chain around his neck.
I also want to mention one of your closest friends in life and the best manager you ever played for, Ted Williams. Am I right, Denny? One of your closest friends in life. And it was Ted Williams who originally said, Ted, why aren't you wearing a banquet? Why aren't you wearing a suit and tie? Ties are good for one thing, to get in your soup. That was Ted Williams. That was his famous comment about that.
Well, we're talking the morning after two incredible football games, and say whatever you want about the NFL and about concussions and about TV ratings. Well, the ratings were great this year because of all the scoring, but you can't match live, unrehearsed entertainment like that. And it was seven magnificent hours, and if anything, puts a bright light to the NFL. And shows what really incredible entertainment and how this league has managed to stay ahead of all of its problems.
I'm going to take issue with you right away on that. As you know, you and I record every single game. You and I never watch a game live. I'm sure you didn't watch the games live on
Sunday.
Actually,
I did yesterday. Sometimes I do. Usually I'm in the bubble.
I recorded the games. If I hadn't recorded the games, the entire day, both games would have been ruined. The constant stoppages for instant replay.
Amazing.
The guys go over to the sidelines 5, 6, 7 minutes, and all the amazingly close calls.
What's the catch? What isn't a coach?
Replay 6 or 7 times. Right. I just fast forwarded through all that stuff.
If I
had watched those games live, it would have ruined both games for me.
Well, it didn't ruin them for me, but I agree with you saying, because 95% of the times I watch in the bubble. That's why this is the 20th anniversary of the most amazing technological invention, and that is TiVo. TiVo is now your DVR. 20 years is 1999, and it has completely changed. Bob Page watches every game at every Michigan State, Tigers, all of them, and without the TiVo or the DVR, you wouldn't be able to do that. Incredible invention that's changed sports watching, also changed sponsorships in many ways.
Just like you guys, I watch a lot of sports on TV, a lot of sports. And I can save, an hour each game, I couldn't even imagine sitting there, sitting through the commercials, sitting through the halftime palaver, so on and so forth. So, I record all the games.
Well, there's lots of people that enjoy that stuff, too. Excuse me, but a lot of people do like that stuff. I mean, a lot of people like somebody coming out and singing the national anthem. I mean, we've all been through that, and a lot of other things that are going on. Listen, there's a lot more going on off the field if you're at the ball game than there is that we get a chance to see.
I'm so happy that you said that, Denny. I kind of wanted it, and you gave me a perfect segue. So I didn't quite, with my recording, I didn't quite come back right when I wanted to. I came back in the middle of a national anthem. I said, I'm going to fast forward. Wait a minute. Who's singing the national anthem? This guy can't even carry a tune.
Jimmy Buffett is terrible.
What a horrible voice. He was a half note flat, a half tone sharp. This is brutal. And this guy is one of the greatest industries in the world today. Mm-hmm. With Jimmy Buffett casinos, hotels, Jimmy Buffett everything. He is a multi-gazillionaire.
Well, he proves one thing.
Some people don't know that.
He proves one thing. If you surround yourself with enough talented people, 7, 8, 10 people, travel with him, play the instruments for him, do all the background stuff for him, anybody can sound good. And I'm not saying he's not. First of all, he's a product, a monster product. And there's nothing you can say that would malign the product. But, if he had to sing alone, he'd be hashing hash.
Yesterday when he sang alone. Yeah.
It is a great show that he puts on.
You're right.
And Margaritaville was a hit that is probably playing somewhere in the world right now. And the whole thing with the parrot and the Key West and that whole thing is just a brilliant marketing plan. Plus, he writes books. He's a talented guy, and probably singing is the worst thing he does.
Now, let's talk about a talented guy, Mr. Brady.
Mr. Brady actually was playing pretty mediocre until it was time to win.
But they were winning and winning and winning. As mediocre as they played, they were winning all the time. They were in the game all the time. They're never dramatically behind at any time. And the bottom line is Mr. Brady in a game like this is going to win the ballgame. Listen, and I'll say it here, and nobody's going to agree.
I disagree with you.
I think he's the greatest quarterback I've ever seen in the entire history of the NFL.
No doubt about that. No doubt. That doesn't mean he had to win that game.
You agree?
Oh, I agree with it. Romo, by the way, is such a fan.
Yeah,
I don't know if I like it or don't like it. He's so engaged in the game, and he's so excited.
I kind of like that.
I do too. You know, and so when he says stuff like "there was 12 men on the field" or "should have ran," his butchering the language I can tolerate because he is. He certainly knows, and he was predicting plays at the end. And when he called on the 4th and 1, and he said Brady's going to come to the line,
yep,
and he's going to run if it's this, and he's going to sweep if it's that, and exactly what
it's
happened.
Amazing.
But wait a minute,
let me say one thing.
Gonzalez, who was doing the color for the football game, was unbelievable when it came to the
studio stuff. Yeah, Tony Gonzalez. Yeah,
stuff. He was unbelievable calling the plays as the play was going over the middle. You remember late in the fourth quarter and then in the overtime.
You talking about Romo or Gonzalez?
I don't think it was Romo. No. I thought it was Gonzalez.
No, Gonzalez was in the pregame. Romo was the color commentator along with Jim Nance.
Okay, well then he did a hell of a job because when he called those three plays almost in a row, that this play was coming over the middle to Bronk. I mean, really knew.
And also Edelman. Edelman's
going to be. Let me finish.
Let me finish.
He's so fresh out of the game.
You're getting the names all wrong.
He's so fresh out of the game that when the quarterbacks come up to the line of scrimmage and you hear him calling out the Mike linebacker's number or whatever, Romo's actually transporting himself down on the field at the same time. He's looking at the same thing the quarterback looks out.
Yeah, but
so he's going to make the same decisions that a guy like Brady's going to make.
Exactly. A quick question for you two geniuses here. I've got one lousy question. Where the hell was all this ability when he was a quarterback with the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, he was a great quarterback.
Great quarterback.
No, he was a very good
quarterback. Very good quarterback. I'll take great. He was a very, very good quarterback.
What did he win? He won nothing.
What does that matter now? He understands the game.
Winning doesn't count.
We're not judging
him as a quarterback. We're judging him as an announcer now.
I am.
Well, you're mixing and matching here. We're talking about Romo as an announcer.
If the shoe fits,
I would say this, though. Denny just said that Brady's the GOAT. And Eli, you agreed. And I agree, too, greatest of all time. But I'm going to say two words right now, D and Ford. And had it not been for D and Ford, Brady really would have been the GOAT yesterday because with 1:10 left, he throws a game-ending interception, Kansas City Chiefs going to the Super Bowl. Tweet, D Ford lined up in the neutral zone?
Yeah, how about this?
He lined up in the neutral zone? That would have been Brady's third interception of that game.
Right.
They go home today, and people are talking about, I think this guy's washed up, man. He's got to quit.
Well, and he did win a Super Bowl once when Russell Wilson threw the ridiculous interception. But in total, so he'd only have 5 Super Bowls instead of 6.
I agree with you. Of course, I agree with you. Yes.
Yeah, so
he's the best ever.
One quick thing about what he did during this week that they were getting ready for this ball game. He called in whoever his workout coach is, whoever that guy is, they never identified him, for 3 days at home and had him work with Brady for 3 straight days. Every day he threw for at least an hour. And I used to do this when I pitched a little bit, take an extra day just to find out if all the mechanics were good. And for 3 straight days, he worked on his mechanics with whoever the coach was. Well, you may say he played mediocre, but the bottom line is he wins the whole thing, and that's the reason why we all agree he's the best to ever play the game.
Well, I think a lot of guys are very much into conditioning, into coaching and all that. So that's part of the whole tableau that is
Brady.
But he's also lucky in that roughing the passer penalty was ridiculous, where the arm just basically
broke.
Didn't they score the tying touchdown then?
The officiating ruined these games yesterday if you were watching live.
Quick snap. Breeze. Pass is incomplete. No flag for Tommy Lee Lewis. Nickell Robey Coleman delivered a hit, and the two officials talk to each other. Crowd's going crazy.
Now, the thing about it is, afterwards, of course, Sean Payton said, well, we really got to revisit instant replay and improve it and expand it more.
It was simple. They blew the call. We said it should never have not been a call. They said not only was it interference, it was helmet to helmet.
Here's what they got to do. I've written letters to the NFL about this. I've talked to NFL officials over the years. This is not a difficult solution. Of course, you can review now just about everything. But think about this. When any controversial play happens on the field, the three of us, everybody watching, we see the replay immediately. Nine times out of ten, we're sitting at home and we can tell immediately, is that a good call or a bad call? However, while we already know whether it was a good call, the coach has to call the referee over to the sidelines. They got to discuss this. Ref's got to announce they're going to challenge the call. Now he goes over to his little porn peep show on the sidelines where they used to have those hoods over the cameras and like that. So, again, this whole process has taken 7 or 8 minutes while you and I knew – 6 minutes ago, whether it was a good call or not. It's so simple. They got an earbud anyway. A guy upstairs, it could be any of the referees, the ex-referees are using, or any kind of official. The guy upstairs sees what the three of us see on TV. He immediately tells the referee, "Nope, missed that call. Take it back." That cuts all.
Those are the
that
simple ones.
Time.
The Edelman one, where Edelman did he touch it or not?
Yeah.
Genuinely required.
That's right.
That's multiple views.
Right. Yes.
Big stand by the Patriot defense, forcing the three and out. Big hop here. Close touch by Edelman. It is picked up by Jeter. Derek Jeter for the touchdown.
And I still think they got that wrong. I thought his left thumb did touch the ball.
I did too.
But beyond that, there was no incontrovertible evidence to overturn the original call on the field.
That's why I was shocked that they overturned it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's why everybody was shocked. Absolutely.
You know, they really have to perfect this. They should be able to do pass interference on replays. That's one of the most controversial calls in the game, as we saw on
Sunday.
But
let me ask you a question.
The thing, you can't challenge penalties, and the most blatant missed call in the game.
They should be able to challenge them, but make it fast.
Listen, if you're going to challenge every call, the game is going to be 6.5 hours. The game is long enough now. 3 hours is plenty for a football game. But if they, I don't know how far you can take this at this point in time. The more rules you throw in it, just look at baseball. They don't have any two-hour games. They'll never have another. They'll never have something just short of 3 hours anymore. Too many rules, too many things going on. And half the time, I don't think the umpires are told what the hell the new rules are. And you got a bunch of new rules coming out this year in baseball. Again, silly rules. Now they're experimenting with the application that goes in a tennis court.
They're going to bring the timing of pitches. Coming. They're going to bring pitch timing back as well. But Danny, the game's not good. They're not going to challenge every play because on every play, again, you've got a guy like Gene Steratore upstairs. He's looking at the immediate replay. He says into his mic to the referee on the field, "Now, let's look at that. You guys missed that call." Bang. Get it done like that.
Yep.
But well, I don't know. As far as your comment about the baseball stuff, what is with this, with the timing of the pitches again? They've tried that,
ridiculous.
And now they're going to bring it back next year? I mean, Danny, you were a fairly quick worker. Yeah. Nobody had to tell you or Lolich or anybody like that, "Hey, speed it up now, speed it up."
You know, listen, when you're in a good rhythm and you're a pitcher, you are going to stay in your good rhythm. If you're winning, you're going to stay in a good rhythm. You're going to be quick. But if you're having a bad day out there, you're going to take your time because you're going to try to help the ball club warm somebody up and some other things that they may want to do. But the bottom line is this thing with baseball is so far out of control, and so many other things are going on in the game right now, this tanking situation that's going on, which we can talk about later.
Yeah, let's not get too far
afield. But the bottom
here.
Line is the two football games yesterday were some of the greatest football I have seen since the San Diego game.
But don't, you're going
in
so
1982.
Far.
No,
you
no,
are
no.
a stream of consciousness,
listen,
my God.
No, no, I'm telling you right now.
Chargers, the Brady conversation.
Chargers beat Miami in four overtimes. It was unbelievable.
Anyway,
as you know, Denny is a noted intellectual. As such, he is a humongous fan of William Faulkner. He's read As I Lay Dying. He's read all of Faulkner's great works. And Faulkner, as we know, wrote in the stream of consciousness.
Yes, there
he did.
Anyway, back to Boomer, I thought was, after the game, was very outspoken about the referees and how terrible it was. And it's true. So we are victims of bad refereeing and of a replay rule because you cannot ignore the technology. Don't forget, for decades, we had replays, and everybody in the ballpark and at home knew exactly what happened, except for the referees on the field.
Right.
And we'd say, this can't go on. You've got to make it so that they can see what we see, at least, and try and get it right. And now we've gotten where we're parsing it, and I don't know, maybe you can refine a little bit, but there's just nothing you could do to shorten that, because the technology is so amazing that every catch can be analyzed. And I think they've lightened up on that a little bit. At least what a catch is isn't so restrictive as it used to be.
Strike zone, too. I mean,
there's a pushback on
baseball
this.
Will you get baseball out of here for now?
Well, we can spend the rest of the show talking about that. But I want to say this. There's a pushback on this. Denny, this is a name that perhaps you do not know. Eli knows him very well. He's one of the most powerful sports columnists in the country. His name is Phil Mushnick, and he writes for the New York Post. Mm-hmm. Mushnick, every other column is railing about the use of any instant replay in sports.
Right.
There are a lot of people who just hate the instant replay. I don't understand that. Get it right. People will tolerate human mistakes by players. They're not going to tolerate officiating mistakes. Then in this case, on Sunday, put the wrong team in the Super Bowl.
I know. Well, again, that you try and restrict it the best you can. Your idea about letting Gene Steratore do it faster, and let's not go through all this. If it's obvious to the guy that's paid by the league what happened, call it faster. No doubt about that. But, you know, you can't. And the whole penalty thing, I mean, the most egregious non-call, you're right, decided who's going to the Super Bowl. So what do you do about that? We may never solve what the best way is.
But here one big point. We can talk about all this nickel-dime stuff for the rest of the hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. The thing that's going to change is the way they decide an overtime game. That has to change. You got to play one full quarter, let both teams have the ball at least once, or at least play a 15-minute quarter, and whoever wins at the end of the 15 minutes, you're the champion. But this stuff about a coin flip, you might as well have the fastest guys on each team run a 100-yard dash, and whoever wins a 100-yard dash, you're going to the Super Bowl.
That's not any more absurd than what they do in hockey with shootouts and stuff.
Absolutely.
It's not any more absurd than that.
Absolutely.
You guys, don't forget, though, that doesn't always apply. Now, you guys, still living in Detroit, as I no longer do, you actually still follow the FLs. We did have a case a few years ago where it was an overtime game. And Marty Morningwegs, we'll go on defense first.
The FLs. We don't use the F word on here, even when you say the FLs.
I didn't use the F word. I said FL.
But back to Denny's point before, again, we in our old age went to four more topics. I agree, because not to let Patrick Mahomes have a chance to touch the ball in overtime is ridiculous. How much beyond that do you have to look to say, you got to do something about this? It's crazy.
Still a coin flip then, the way it used to be with just a field goal.
And the excitement that he brought to the game. I mean, you knew he was going to light up the field again. I mean, and I don't think we could have been playing still that ball game last night. And if Brady could score, this kid was going to score again. They could not stop him. Of course, they had a little bit of help, too, from the refs.
I do want to talk about the fact that the offenses and the scoring and all the rules changes has made the game very much more enjoyable. Would you have rather seen that or the old NFC North slugfest between the Bears and the Lions where you're gaining 3 yards and 2 yards and smash-mouthing each other? This is a much more scientific...
You're asking me a question.
Me too?
I remember growing up, of course, as a wacko Lions fan. I remember when Dick Butkus ran Alty Taylor at Wrigley Field into one of the brick walls. He ran right off the field and into one of the brick walls. Yep. And you saw Butkus, you know, breathing smoke coming on. Man, I love those days.
Yeah, I love the football game 7-6, 10-7. I love the baseball game 1-0, 2-1. To me, that's what the sport was all about. It's about the ability and the talent to get something done, not 44-42. I mean, you know, come on.
Well, then you're a purist, but the league is looking for ways to get more people engaged for ratings. And by the way, the NFL ratings spiked this year because the offense is key. I mean, the Chiefs scored 565 points. There were 1,371 touchdowns in 2018, most in the history of the game. Quarterbacks threw more touchdown passes than ever. And for the first time ever, two teams scored more than 50 points in a game. That was the Chiefs game. I forget who they played. That was an amazing game. So dozens of individual and team offensive records fell, and the TV ratings spiked. So it's all planned, as well it should be, because they're selling a product. And the product, as we saw, is incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that is that defensive coordinators are being paid $3-5 million.
It's unbelievable.
Now. And there's some great ones, and they're designed to stop this stuff. It's a scientific kind of matchup, and they're always coming up with new things, new techniques. So I think, yeah, the NFL is hugely entertaining. I just didn't like what I saw Sunday because of all the officials' calls, the blown calls, and the replay delays.
Seems to me, not a football expert, when years ago they would say, oh, he's calling an audible at the line of scrimmage. He's changing the play. Now, Brady will change the play 3 or 4 times because he's, as Romo said, he's an offensive coordinator on the field.
Right.
And that's why even when you watch the college game, you watch Michigan and Shea Patterson struggling to get a play in from the sidelines when they could have run 4 plays if the quarterback was able to do what these brilliant quarterbacks do. And it started, I really think it started back with this whole run and shoot stuff and the West Coast offense.
Mouse Davis. And then, run and shoot offense.
And well, before that, Walsh had, you know, the West Coast offense, where suddenly you'd run a play and there's no running back in the backfield. How can they do that?
Yeah.
He's not under center, where the shotgun was like a rare. So it's fascinating what they've done. And then, of course, he can't. They showed at one point in the game replay of a Minnesota Vikings game at the end of Favre's career. Maybe it was the last time that the Saints beat them or something. And Favre just getting the crap kicked out of him. And 3 or 4 plays, whoa, they can't do that today. They're knocking him down, and after he's thrown the ball. So they've really and Brady actually in 2008 whatever the year was where they beat broke his knee, or they injured his knee in the first game. They changed all that stuff about touching quarterbacks. And now this year you can't even land on the quarterback,
Bob,
as you tackle him.
Bob, just you and me for just a second. See, we go back to the when men were men. We didn't wear all the face masks, right? I mean, we didn't. They didn't wear face masks. When we were growing
single
up.
Single face masks.
Well, single bar, yeah.
A single bar. That was the most we saw for a long time. Then, of course, they started putting all the other stuff on there. But I still enjoy that game. I mean, when you see the games that they're still able to run sometimes.
But you don't enjoy seeing all the guys that are turned 50 and they got ALS and they got CTE.
That's a whole different world.
That's
something else that has to be, and they're dealing with it. They are dealing with it. And what has it caused? It's caused an uproar in the insurance industry, hasn't it?
It's true, but, you know.
I thought that was a great lead-in.
Yep, it was a great lead-in. Okay, because they can't get insured anymore. But it was interesting. Before I get into that, there was a spot in the first game, I'm trying to find it, I made notes on it, called Protecting the Game. And it was done by a Chiefs guy where now they're saying how the research and we're protecting people's heads and this PR push to say we're doing everything in our power, the NFL is saying, to make the game safe.
And I don't know, how they do that. These guys are bigger and quicker than ever before.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable how fast they run. It's just unbelievable.
Right.
In fact, they're faster than you are.
As I wrote you guys yesterday in an email, I believe science will solve all issues, not just presenting the issues in sports, but also issues relating to the planet. So I think that they're going to continue to develop helmet technology. I can see a day where somehow they'll develop something that's going to go on somebody's knees, make knees slightly swivel somehow through technology so that they don't absorb a direct hit. Billy Sims would have had one of the greatest careers ever, as we all know. One, you know what? That's why if you look at also the games on Sunday. So Kareem Hunt, one of the great running backs in football, is basically fired at midseason because of the latest spousal abuse, women's abuse in sports, right? So how's Kansas City going to win without him? You can get good running backs on the waiver wire. You can find guys in the 6th or 7th round, Bill Belichick does it all the time, who become really solid contributing running backs, and the Chiefs found a couple guys real quickly. So the idea is that you have to be careful about drafting a running back too high, as the New York Giants did with Saquon Barkley, because one hit and their careers are
over. Done.
Yep. You know,
we have to solve that somehow.
In 2013 was the first time NFL teams passed on all running backs in the first round, and I think it happened again in 2014.
And one other quick question. Is Belichick now proven he's the best coach in the history of the game?
He didn't have to prove that.
Yeah,
that was already proved. He didn't have to.
Just making sure, because we are the authority of authority.
Let's take a little 1-minute break here for our first sponsor. Okay.
Wow,
yeah.
No kidding.
More
we got
come.
A sponsor?
Got a sponsor, yes. The Aldo Eye Center.
What are those places for anybody from Detroit watching us right now? One of those places on 8 Mile, you mean? Where you pull into the lot at 11 o'clock at night?
And No. Nobody's watching us. This is a podcast, but that's okay. It's a new year, a new outlook, and maybe a new look altogether without glasses, contacts.
But by the way, we do have coupons for those places.
So in other words, I actually thought that people would be able to see us because we're looking at each other on
That's
Skype.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you guys want to make some money, could you please shut up?
This has to be out on TV somewhere.
Please, I'm trying to earn us some money here. Calm down. All right. Anyway, it's a new year, new outlook, and without glasses, contacts, or the continual bother of reading glasses. This will be the 20th year since I threw my glasses away and got a relatively new procedure called LASIK surgery back at the turn of the century, when I immediately saw better than I ever had with those big old glasses, knew how significant that breakthrough was, and since then, with technological advances, custom LASIK. From Dr. Yaldo, who's done 30,000 of these procedures, he's Michigan's most experienced eye surgeon, gives most patients better than 20/20 vision. Then in 2017, with cataracts, which you will all have, and I think, Bob, you're starting to get them too. 50 and older is the Rolls-Royce procedure.
I've got them.
Have you gotten them taken out yet?
No, not – you mean the first time?
Yeah.
No, I've got them. I had the operation.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Anyway, you should find out about this because now you can also get for reading glasses. You don't need reading glasses anymore for these multifocal lenses that you can see perfectly for the rest of your life, and you never will get cataracts. So just call 1-800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. So
go to the insurance.
Before we can go to the insurance. Yeah. Can I put something else to put the game behind?
What else are you going to read? Okay. I mean, you've been reading stuff here for the last
because
hour.
Bob was talking about shuttling through. Tell me why, this is a little light moment here, these insurance companies, everything is supposed to be funny. The Geico, with now they're doing that Time Life Warner thing, you know, where they're pretending to, you know, the old Geico stuff. You got you got State Farm with the Rogers stuff. Everything's trying to be funny. Mayhem, Flow with Progressive. It's amazing how much money these companies spend.
They want you to be of good cheer the moment you actually gulp, have to make a claim. That, of course, they're not going to pay, and they're going to fight you tooth and nail. It's so unpleasant dealing with insurance companies. Anytime, just because you're paying premiums every month to an insurance company, it doesn't give you the right to make a claim.
So if you do,
they're going
to
cancel you.
So they want us to think that you're just nice guys because they're funny and they entertain us.
Oh, yeah, you know. Great guys.
Well, talk about insurance then, because this is something also facing, threatening the future of football. Go ahead. You want to bring the topic up, Denny? Knock it out.
I want you to bring it up. You brought it up to me yesterday. You got a better handle on this than I do. Other than it's causing all kinds of problems.
Apparently, even down to Pop Warner, it's fundamentally changing the economics of the sport, because now that we know CTE, now that we know it can be a lifetime of not just injury, but ruining your life, ending your life, ruining your family life. It's terrible. And we've seen what's happening, and now we hear that people, these insurance companies, there are very few left that will cover head injuries, and only one carrier apparently is willing to provide workers' compensation coverage to NFL teams. So this is some very serious stuff. That and the league is already $1 billion in the hole, having lost that judgment towards all these players, and that's just the start of it, I think.
Do you remember when we were growing up as kids and you used to take, I don't know if it was candy bars or the Little League decal, and you'd go to house and try to raise $5 from everybody or $1 from everybody, and they would take the money, gather it, and then put it into the league? Well, that also used to cover liability insurance. That dollar or $5. Today, apparently it's $35 or $40 or $50, which is not a whole lot of money in the grand scheme of things if you want your child to play. But just the idea, we're talking billions now. I mean, we're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars for these insurance companies to come up. When does it end? If there's only one guy left, somebody has to come up with a program. And who winds up when they come up with a program? Who winds up getting hurt? The players will wind up losing this one in a very serious way in the NFL. Because the owners, these NFL owners, they look for every little pop that they can cut from everything to make it more rewarding for themselves. I just don't think that, yes, they're working scientifically, Bob, like you said. Everything can be answered with science. It just takes a lot longer scientifically to get something done.
I don't get
now,
why.
Here's a company you've never heard of before, Citizens Insurance Company.
Sure we have.
Because you don't need it. Citizens Insurance Company was mandated by the state of Florida as the representative to handle all of our claims. I live down here where I'm speaking to you today from West Palm Beach for hurricanes, because Allstate, State Farm, all the biggies pulled out of Florida. Yeah. And they said, we are not going to insure homes in Florida any longer. So they set up this deal with Citizens, where Citizens has been, at least, has been the primary insurer. So I could see a day where this situation, as you suggest, becomes so bad that the NFL goes to work with somebody or something, one company, and says, okay, we're going to have to work out a deal where you insure us no matter what. And that is going to be the insurer of choice for the National Football League. You're saying right now, Eli, and this courtesy of Bruce Motti, by the way, the longtime Michigan sports information director who sent this around to, sent this to me in an email the other day. And you're saying right now that there is only one company, according to this article, that's left insuring people in the NFL. Maybe the NFL is going to help this company. You know what I'm saying? A little aid from somewhere. I don't know what they're going to do, but they got to do something.
I get that, but why Pop Warner? I mean, if you take a couple of head hits when you're 8 years old, you're not going to see the results for a long time. So
yeah, but there's always one chance of one kid getting whacked worse than somebody else. I mean, 8-year-olds, you can't imagine them knocking somebody crazy. But you know what? It happens. People make mistakes. People, you know, they're not supposed to put helmet on helmet either. And when we were growing up, that's all we learned. We learned to put helmet on helmet, right, if you recall, when we were practicing every day. So, I mean, the game has changed so dramatically. And I'm not sure if all the parents who are involved in these games really want to play along the new rules, because they all grew up with the old rules.
Let me ask you guys a quick question. If you had sons today,
no,
and your son came to you and said, I'm going out for Pop Warner or Little League football, would you let your son play football?
That's a thorny question. I would try to discourage him. I don't know if I could actually stop him, but yes, I would discourage him. Hey,
Danny,
I didn't want to play football either.
Did your son play football?
I had both of my sons played football for a little while, but both of them wanted to play baseball, so I was lucky.
That's a long time ago.
Long time ago.
Today. Would you let today, his son play football?
No, I don't think so. I would do everything I could to talk him out of it. But if they wanted to play bad enough, you're eventually going to go. You're going to give in. But fortunately, we never had to make that decision growing up.
I tell you.
I agree. I agree. Yeah, I would
terrible.
Try to discourage a son of mine. But if the kids are going to do, as we all know, being fathers, kids are going to do what they want to do. And eventually we can't stop them if we try it. It sows seeds.
And you know what else, Bob? If a father sees some talent in a 12 or 13 or 14-year-old, that father, I'm talking football now, if he sees some talent and his son can throw the ball 30, 40, 50 yards down the field, that father is going to be involved in that kid becoming a football player. Because everybody thinks they're getting a big check.
Something very interesting happened. And when you do shuttle through like you do on the DVR, you do miss some stuff. It's still worth doing it. But there was the helmet-to-helmet hit early in the game. Josh Hill of the Saints got hit and then was taken out of the game and never returned. They announced he was under a concussion protocol. And then...
Well, I saw that. I just go through the commercials and the halftime
stuff. Okay, but then they had this thing called the Future of Football, where they did this, you know, little PR piece where it said now they're protecting on kickoff protection. And I didn't even know that. There's no running starts now in the NFL on a kickoff. And so there's this sense that we need to do something quickly to make up for all time. And by the way, when Dave Duerson... shot himself in the chest so they could use his brain for research, and then the Junior Seau and all that, there's this panic going on, and for good reason. So usually you're trying to catch up too late. The NHL, with many, many examples of CTE destroying players' lives, still will not admit a connection between head trauma in the game and CTE, and the NFL with the whole $1 billion thing hasn't even been paid off
but
yet.
The NHL union, the players, they're not strong enough to take a stand. They could never ever just walk away from the game.
I can't even watch boxing. I used to, as Bob knows, I love boxing.
Yeah.
I have a hard time watching when I see what happened to Ali, who was a great example of that with the head trauma.
Tommy Hearns.
Tommy's still there. I don't think he has any serious neurological disease, but Tommy took a ton of punishment. By the way, it's different for everybody. Some guys can have, you know, minimum head trauma and have it lead to CTA, and other guys can get clobbered for years and not. But it seems to show up, what was in 95% of the cases. So it's interesting. There's always the two sides. There's this insurance problem you're talking about, which is serious. Same thing with the asbestos industry. I saw a comparison to that, that it cost insurers $100 billion there. So we love the game. It's incredibly entertaining. And we kind of put that aside as we watch it and enjoy it. Kind of the same thing.
Because we ain't playing. That's why.
That's number one. But number two, let me tag on to this with this other thing that's really got me. This literally had me upset a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know if I've died down yet on it yet. These kids skipping bowl games. All of a sudden, they're a legend in their own mind, and they want to go into the NFL. Most of them don't get drafted anyway, or they get drafted so low that they're not gonna, they're more of a suspect than they are a prospect.
What do I disagree with this?
I know you do. But the bottom line is, with this kind of a thing, if you sign that contract to play 3 or 4 years, 2 years, whatever it is, you can quit when you want to quit. But you made a commitment. You play in those bowl games. And if you don't play in those bowl games, and give the money back to the universities, that's wrong.
I know that Eli, I know that Eli apparently disagrees with you. I am with you 100%, Danny.
God bless you.
The first guy who did this was Christian McCaffrey of Stanford a few years ago.
Right.
So could you just think of this. Okay. Now it's 1968 again. Okay. And you're the greatest pitcher in baseball. Now Mickey Lolich has got a chance to make some money someplace else. He's had a great year. And he says, well, I got to save myself. I got a chance to say, I'm not going to play in the World Series. You live and die with your brothers, your teammates all year long. When it comes to the biggest moment of the season, your bowl game. Nah, you know, I got to think about myself, man. Why don't you get an insurance policy to take you through the bowl game?
Doesn't work as well.
I think it's one of the worst things I've ever seen. You desert your teammates at the moment they need you the most, just because I'm thinking I can make a lot of money in the NFL.
Right.
Get an insurance
policy.
There's
many, many cases of when the system in college deserts the players. Like, how about the kid at Ohio State who's ready to take over for Dwayne Haskins, and they bring in a Justin Fields from Georgia. Okay,
well,
so now you're
right
going to be a bench guy.
But that's not the same argument, though. You're
right.
And if you want, and Denny says he get paid with a scholarship. Yeah, and you're told what to study and how much you can study and how much time you had at it. And if you're doing bad at it, we'll have somebody take the test for you or give you the answers.
And they do all that. They do all that for the kids.
The point is, Devin Bush came to Michigan.
Do they really come out of college with an education? The football players.
No, they don't.
They don't. They really don't. Now they got to go out and hustle again if they don't get drafted by somebody.
So you're answering your own argument.
No.
You're negotiating against yourself.
I agree with Bob.
The point is, Devin Bush is going to be picked in the top 15 or 20 of the draft if he had gotten
hurt. He's not. It's probably going to be lower than that. He's 5'11". He's going to go lower. He'll probably go in the first round, but late first round.
Well, I heard about the
they need you. Play in the bowl game, for goodness sake.
Yes.
And I don't know why are you saying that you can't get an insurance policy to take you through a bowl game? How come?
Well, we're talking about insurance. I don't know. But it was a BS bowl game. It was the Chick-fil-A
Peach
Bowl,
a BS
which
bowl
meant
game.
Nothing to anybody.
Wait a minute. It wasn't a BS bowl game for the team he's with. They're getting a ton of money.
There's two
Excuse
sides.
Me. That's not only true, but let me tell you something. You're a University of Michigan graduate, for goodness
sake.
Danny
and
I'm a Michigan State graduate, and Danny's a Michigan State fan, but I love Michigan football still. I'm watching that game. That Michigan-Florida game was not a BS game to me. I want to see Michigan play. And the Michigan State Bowl game, that's not a BS game to me.
Then how come Jimmy Harbaugh says, I understand, it's perfectly okay? Why would he say that about that? And my reason is that they came to Michigan to be professional football players because there's no other way to do it. You either play in our Division I system or you don't get to play professional
it's
football.
It's called bribery.
That's why, right.
It's
so
called bribery.
That's why he's
let you do anything you want if you want to come and play on my football team. That means you can go out with her, you can go out with him, you can go out with anybody you want to do it. Do whatever you want to do. We're going to take care of your studies. We're going to take care of your clothes. We're going to get you real nice
car. Because you're a professional football
player.
And
if you don't want to play a certain game because you got a headache, you don't have to play. I mean, isn't that a little bit ludicrous and outrageous? It really is. You're either a teammate or you aren't.
Two sides to the issue.
I'm with Denny, pal. You just got outvoted 2-1.
Yeah, so just move on.
I would have decided. I think the answer is, what is your goal when you go to Michigan? And your goal is to become, for these great players, the top you know, let's say 10% of the team to be a professional football player. So that's my goal. There's no doubt about it.
To me, if you're lucky enough to matriculate at the University of Michigan, one of the august research, world-renowned research and academic institutions, my goal would be to get a college degree from the University of Michigan. That would be my goal. Nevertheless, if I don't even speak standard English and my SAT scores are brutal and I can barely read and write the English language at rudimentary levels,
you better become a pro and don't get hurt in the bowl game.
Be an NFL player. Why don't you go to a junior college or go to Central Michigan, or you go to my alma mater, Michigan State, for goodness sake. You don't go to the University of Michigan to be a pro athlete. You're there to get a degree, damn it.
You know, the other thing, too, I tune into them. I watch a Michigan game every week, too, like most of us do. And I got to tell you, the only reason I keep tuning into the Michigan game, I want to see if Jim Harbaugh remembers anything about playing in the NFL.
Why do you say that? What do you mean?
He doesn't win.
No, he doesn't.
Whatever happened to Jim?
I don't know about
that.
What happened? It's a pretty good record, you know? Yeah, but it's just not good enough at Michigan. The big thing with Michigan, of course, is A, Ohio State, and B, Michigan State. You got to beat Ohio State and Michigan State.
Right,
and
exactly. What's his record in November? His record from November on?
I think Harbaugh's going to continue to beat Michigan State now. I really do. I think the pendulum has swung back to Michigan.
I do, too. Yeah, I do,
but,
too.
The Ohio State thing is just, you can't survive. If he loses to Ohio State again next year, 62 points, if he loses to Ohio State again next year, I don't see how Jimmy survives. I really don't.
When I went to Michigan 50 years ago this year, by the way, stunningly enough, it was the Big Two, Little Eight. And
of
now
course.
What we have in the college game is the Big Two and the little 173, which are the other teams that can't beat Alabama and Clemson. Ohio State has a chance, and that's the problem you have at Michigan and other big-time programs that just aren't there at that level, like Notre Dame, etc., because Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban own college football, plain and simple.
Saban certainly does right now.
Yeah,
they really do. I mean, Saban is unbelievable. I've never seen anybody control anything like he does in college football.
Let's talk a little bit. We got time for one more topic with Bob and Denny here. No Filter, our first podcast here together. Actually, we did one other, but it's more official today.
Oh, by the way, for people like who are just joining their show, we better tell them again what's going on.
Here's the thing. This is Eli Zarrett
with the classic Eli Zarrett gravelly voice. That's the once great baseball pitcher, Denny McClain. And this is Bob Page. These are the people you've been listening to if you tuned in late.
Now, but that's the thing, Bob. And this is the difference we have to get used to. People don't tune in late. They tune in from the beginning. In radio, where this would be a four-hour show, they could tune in at 10, 10:30, 11. So you have to constantly reintroduce. But people always listen to the first 5 or 10 minutes of a podcast, and they know who you are.
So people, yeah, I know what you're saying.
So people
I hear podcasts. I hear podcasts on SiriusXM now that they don't even identify as podcasts until the end of the show. Thank you for listening to this podcast. What? I got it on SiriusXM. Well,
that's different then. You're right. You're right. Because then you could tune in the middle, because Sirius is not an on-demand format. But one thing I want to get into is very interesting here, because now the Patriots and the Rams will play in Super Bowl 53. And this week, it's going to be a lot of talk in the next 2 weeks about what happened the last time they played in 2001, the greatest show on turf, when the Patriots defeated the Rams 2017. And now Eric Dickerson and Kurt Warner, a little more guardedly, who are in that game, say that the Patriots cheated. And it was a Boston Herald story back then that claimed the team illegally filmed the Rams Super Bowl walkthrough. So many Rams players are still convinced the Patriots cheated, including Eric Dickerson says, "We want a rematch against the Patriots because they cheated us." So here's the question.
Hang it up a second. What is this, a scoop of some kind? Belichick cheats every day.
Okay, but just to finish.
Denny's right about that. It's not the first time this has happened.
This guy's the smartest. We all say he's the greatest coach in the history of the game.
Fine.
Do you think he doesn't cheat?
The accusation, though, was
that White Sox are still giving signals from center field to home plate to their hitters.
Let's talk about that. What he's complaining about is that they filmed their walkthrough the day before, so is that cheating? Is that not cheating? Is it just unethical? And what is cheating and what isn't? Is throwing a spitball cheating? Or is it, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying?
It's professional football. You can do anything you want. It's professional.
You can do anything you can get away with.
Right. They're getting paid.
The, The thing that blows my mind, if you go back to Denny's heyday, and of course throughout the history of baseball, everybody's stealing signals. It's an art form, stealing signals. And now in baseball, the 21st century, oh, that's a no-no. Man, you're cheating. You're stealing signals. What? Game's always been like that.
Well, the most famous is the Bobby Thompson home run where they were stealing signals and he knew what pitch was coming from Big Ralph number 13 Branca, which is what Howard Cosell
said. Listen, let me interrupt the two of you about the signals, all right? I know a little bit about this subject. Okay. There is not a hitter that I ever knew in the major leagues that accepted signals.
What do you mean accepted
because
signals?
It takes one pitch to be wrong and you're dead. It takes one pitch.
Yeah, I've heard that. Gil Hodges, for one. They don't want to be tipped off about
the
pitch.
Let me tell you something.
They don't want to know what pitch.
Try to give Al Kaline, when he was playing, the signals. Try to give him. He would go down to you and he'd eat your butts out like you can't imagine. I don't want to know. Listen, I've hit 300 my whole career. I don't need your help. That's exactly what Kaline would tell him. Willie Horton, the same way. All these guys that I knew, the great hitters, Tony Oliva said, whenever they'd come, they got this thing in Chicago. Hell, who the hell did Chicago ever beat?
So you're telling me that when the guy at center field at the Polo Grounds told Bobby Thompson, curveball is coming from Branca, and it was a curveball, and he hit the shot heard around the world, that's perfectly legitimate because you're allowed to cheat in sports.
Nobody believes the story. That played the game. Nobody believes the story that played the game.
I've never heard that. But you know what? To continue on this point that Denny made, and it's very, very ironic that Dennis Dale McClain himself made this point. How about the greatest tipped pitch in the history of baseball when the batter knew what was coming, he was told what was coming, and Mickey Mantle still couldn't hit a home run off Denny McClain?
Yeah, but he did.
He did.
The thing about it, though.
I know that.
But it took
him.
This is the thing. That's what was crazy. I had to throw him three pitches before he realized what the hell was going on. I knew then I wasn't working with a Rhodes Scholar. I mean, and I had to yell down to him. So where the hell do you want to pitch? And he finally said, here, inside a little bit. You're throwing the ball a little bit high. And threw the ball next pitch. And, of course, he hit it over the light towers. But, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I forgot about that.
And what was fascinating was how much Mantle loved Denny after that. We did an interview with him. We did our show in the mid-90s, and he was just gushing Denny how much he loved him and what a difference that made. Of course, now he's like 19th on the list. I think that made him past Jimmy Fox, that home run in 68 that put him.
It doesn't make any difference. It was all important at that moment. That's what it was all about. The moment at that point in time. And then, of course, he hit one more. I think it was Al Downing who gave him the last one.
Yeah.
And he hit another one there. But the idea that he was going to hit one more home run in Tiger Stadium and number 535 and the way we did it, that's what it was all about. Because they didn't do that with Downing.
Back to cheating. So was deflating footballs cheating? Is coming in with your spikes high cheating?
Yeah.
But you think that's cheating? High spikes?
What we're saying is, is it immoral? Yeah. Is it cheating? Technically, it is. Yeah. What we're saying is it's always been going on.
Yeah.
It's always been going on. It's just this human nature, you know, especially when it's high stakes human nature, as this stuff is, to probably get any kind of advantage you can, whether it's unfair or not.
Well, this is about an hour. This is how long our podcast should be. I think an hour is a nice little sizable chunk. And let's do two of these a week. Okay. We did one today that is going to be posted Monday. It'll be available Tuesday. I say we do one the end of the week so people have two podcasts to listen to. And let's build this and have some fun, okay?
Lots of fun.
Those of you who are hearing us on this, the first podcast we've done, tell your friends, tell your family. Tell everybody we're on the air, because that's the thing about podcasts. It's difficult for people to find out that you're on one, difficult to find out when you're on or how they can access it or whatever it is. And when they go to the No Filter website, don't they, Eli?
It's called NoFilterSportsPodcast.com. But if they found us, they already found it somehow, but it's NoFilterSportsCast.com. Now, also, we're doing this in a beautiful studio that is in the basement of Drew Lane's house. Now, Drew, with the Drew and Mike show.
It is not. Drew Lane has made so many millions of dollars. You think he lives in that that house where you guys are.
No, he lives
in
the basement. Sure,
he's got some unbelievable mansion out in Bloomfield.
No, no,
Hills
he lives
or
in Bob. Bob, he lives in this basement.
He lives upstairs. The basement. This is one of his. No, the point is, this podcast, and it seemed so unlikely 5 or 10 years ago. Well, how do you find it? Who's going to listen? It isn't broadcast out there. Well, Drew now is getting 60,000 downloads a day on the Drew and Mike Show. This is stunning how people's listening habits have changed thanks to this little smartphone we have in our pocket. And so it's interesting that a bunch of old guys like us that have a lot to offer that would never get hired in traditional radio or TV, like I said, we wouldn't want to either, then we can be there. We can be out there. People can find us and we can find them. It's fascinating how this whole gig economy has changed. Anybody can be a cab driver with Uber and anybody can do a sports show like us.
Or do both.
Yeah.
Right. And they're good drivers and bad.
If this show doesn't work out, I think Denny might have to be a cab driver with Uber pretty soon, right?
What is he smoking again?
Anyway, a lot of fun, guys. We will see you next time. Thanks for tuning into the No Filter Sports Podcast. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, and Bob Pate. So long, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.